So do I go?
Oh, I didn't know that part.
This is worth repeating.
Okay.
This is worth repeating.
Live storytelling from Texas Public Radio.
I grew up in Huntsville, Alabama in the 1960s during the middle of the space race. My father was a NASA engineer working on Wernher von Braun's Saturn V rocket team that first sent mankind or took mankind to the moon. So space was in my blood. I majored in chemistry and physics at the University of Alabama and got a PhD in space science at University of Michigan. And then I worked for NASA for 7 years. In 1988, I moved to San Antonio to work with Southwest Research Institute. And my boss brought to my attention a new program. I was interested in planetary science. It was a mission to Saturn called Cassini-Huygens. And so I did write a proposal. Fortunately, I got a call a few months later. I had been successful. I was very excited about it because it would support my space science career for at least 15 years because it was going to be a long mission. And one of my daughters, 10 years old at the time, overheard me on the phone discussing the contract for this program. And since it was a very lengthy program, there was a large budget associated with it. And she overheard that, and at the end of the phone conversation, she turned to me and she said, "Dad, if they're giving you that much money to do Cassini, you can build a swimming pool in the backyard." So she got her swimming pool, and and I went on to develop an instrument. It was a mass spectrometer. I led a team to develop a mass spectrometer. And a mass spectrometer is like a giant robotic nose that's attached to the spacecraft. Very, very sensitive. In 1997, we launched it from Cape Canaveral, actually. And it started on its seven-year cruise to Saturn. And we had a few bumps along the way, but that was a good thing. We had 7 years to work out all the problems. We got there. We were captured into Saturn orbit in July of 2004. And we began this fantastic mission, which was absolutely a lot of fun. At least the discovery part of it can be a big adrenaline rush. And here we have a whole bunch of new instruments in a new place. And it was just like kids in a candy factory. But the interesting thing was that Mother Nature was always one step ahead of us, always doing something that was different than we ever had naively conceived of. So just a couple of examples of that. One was Titan. It's the second largest moon in the solar system. It's enshrouded in smog, organic chemicals making up smog. You can't see the surface unless you look with infrared eyes or if you look with a radar and you can see the surface. Our first job was to drop off the probe. The probe was to descend to the surface and make measurements through the atmosphere. But we were just the supporting cast on the flybys of Titan. We are flying by 600 miles above. And so there was not much anticipation that our instrument would understand much about what was going on from the point of view of Titan. Well, we got our opportunity on the second flyby. We were absolutely amazed at the chemist seeing all these different chemical compounds. They thought we'd see just a little bit of stuff, and we saw this huge array of chemicals, some of them as big as insulin, and floating 1,000 kilometers or 600 miles above the surface. Our instrument was right in the middle of this big chemical factory that's the largest organic chemical factory in the solar system. And the instrumentation that could see the surface eventually came up with an inventory of the methane lakes and the organic tar dunes that were on the surface. And it's something like 100 times the coal, gas, and oil reserves of the Earth. So it's really incredible. The other place that was probably the most interesting was this small moon that's about 200 miles in diameter, and it's an icy moon. It's supposed to be very cold, and it's supposed to be not much going on. So on one of the first flybys, the magnetometer instrument saw that there was some deflection or some signal that indicated something interesting. So they redirected the mission a bit. We flew by. Our instrument, again, was lucky. About 5,000 miles away, we start seeing all kinds of water vapor. And very unexpected. No, you know, the water's supposed to be frozen out there. It's 77 degrees Kelvin on the surface of this place. Well, it turns out that there's volcanoes of water coming out of the interior in the South Pole. So there's an ocean below the ice. There are hydrothermal systems in the ocean. Hydrothermal systems in the Earth's ocean are where we think life might have formed. So we were very excited towards the end of the mission to get to make some measurements that indicated that there was chemical food that was sufficient to support microbes in the interior ocean. Now, we didn't discover microbes, don't get me wrong, but we did discovered that this place was habitable. And so I had my one day of international fame on the news broadcast, and unfortunately it was cut short by a Trump tweet, but nonetheless, it's okay. So, but right now we're closing in on the end of Cassini. Cassini lasted, three times longer than it's supposed to. It's been fantastic. We've got this end game where we're going in between the rings and the atmosphere and making still great measurements. So in a week, I'll trek out with my family. The daughters will come with us. They're in their 30s now, and they'll be grandchildren. But we'll go say goodbye to Cassini. It's been a fantastic mission, and it's going to be kind of tough because being one of those scientists in the feeling like he's in the candy factory, getting a new injection of data from a place nobody's ever seen before every week is pretty exciting. But we'll move on and do different things. Thank you.